Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, Friday, June 17th, 2022. Front page. Midland gas, 19 cents below state. $4.50 per gallon ties for sixth lowest of 27 larger metropolitan areas, AAA Texas surveys, by Stuart Doreen. The average gas price across the state increased 7 cents this week. The story was not the same in Midland. AAA Texas reported Thursday that the average in Midland dropped 1 cent this week. The end result was an average in Midland, $4.50 a gallon, that was not only 19 cents lower than the state average, $4.69, but tied for the sixth lowest of the 27 larger metropolitan areas AAA Texas surveys. Last week, Midland's average was the eighth lowest. The pace of pump price increases slowed this week, but price records were set in many areas, AAA Texas stated in its weekly report. Higher gas prices are due to continued strong demand along with persistent concern over tightening global crude oil supplies with the ongoing war in Ukraine and the world cutting off Russian oil. Market analysts are watching how pressure from sky-high inflation and record fuel prices will impact demand in the coming weeks, noting it is possible that the recent interest rate increase by the Federal Reserve could slow demand and, in turn, cause gas prices to drop. West Texas was home to some of the lowest averages in the state, with Odessa, $4.46, and San Angelo, $4.47, coming in with the fourth and fifth lowest averages, respectively. Midland and Lubbock are tied for sixth. The lowest average in the state this week was found in McAllen, $4.41. Midland was one of nine larger metropolitan areas to show a decrease this week. Its average is up $1.53 compared to a year ago. That increase was the second lowest increase of the 27 larger markets. Odessa was first at $1.49. The state average was up $1.93 in the last year. Other averages from across the region included $4.59 in Amarillo, $4.64 in Abilene, and $4.82 in El Paso. The national average was $5.01. MISD budget, $37 million for allowances, for alliances. Money includes additional $7.7 million in SB 1882 funding. By Stuart Doreen. Eight Midland ISD campuses will bring an additional $7.7 million in state funding, according to the district. The schools are Young Women's Leadership Academy, Idea Travis, Sam Houston Collegiate Preparatory Academy, Carver Center, Ben Millam International Academy, Bunch Elementary School, and Goddard Junior High. They are referred to as 1882 schools, a reference to Senate Bill 1882, which was passed by the Texas Legislature in 2017. The Texas Education Agency states that Senate Bill 1882 provides incentives for districts to contract to partner with an open enrollment charter school, institutions of higher education, nonprofits, or government entities. Some companies or campuses are partnerships with out-of-district entities like Young Women's Preparatory Network, YWLA, Idea Public Schools, Idea Travis, and Third Future Schools, Sam Houston Collegiate Prep. Others are district-run programs in other schools like Carver Center, Ben Millam International Academy, Bunch Elementary School, and Goddard Junior High. During budget workshops, Midland ISD board members learned about the expense of running those schools. MISD reports $37.426 million will be spent on partnerships, which is up from $35.902 million from projected end-of-year activity in 2021-22. Midland ISD reported the increase in expenditures is based on increasing numbers of students and partnerships. That includes grade levels being added at Idea Travis and YWLA. MISD also reported an increased number of students in sixth grade and other classes at Sam Houston. The estimated expense line item for the partnerships is the total of salaries, contracted services, supplies, and other operating expenses, MISD reported. Most school budgets are 75 to 80% salaries and the rest to operate the school campus. The district provides a revenue estimate based on ADA, average daily attendance. The partnership then builds the budget for their campus. Once their board approves the budget, it is submitted to MISD. For the upcoming year, the 1882 funds account for 20.57% of the expenditures set aside for the partnerships. Midland's total proposed budget calls for $437 million in total expenditures, including $190.246 million on salaries and benefits, $153.944 million on recapture, and $41.795 million spent on departments across the district. The partnership's line item is the fourth largest. Black-owned businesses to be on display at Juneteenth Expo. Commentary, Midland Businessman. Holiday allows Midlanders to note accomplishments of next generation of Black-owned businesses. By Roy Nelson. As I reflect on Juneteenth and get ready for the Midland Chapter NAACP Black Business Expo, I ask, what were the first Black-owned businesses to settle in Midland? Surely, when the Emancipation Proclamation was effected in Texas in 1886, there were likely no Black-owned businesses in the area. In fact, the first settlers in the Midland area began around 1832 and had large parcels of land for ranching and agricultural interest. Again, there were no likely Black families settling with the large ranches. The township in the Midland area really began its growth in the late 1880s when lots were sold to support the area as a shipping midpoint for rail and later oil. The Black settlers likely came about in the 1920s in support of the growing township needs. I noticed in the 1931 Midland City Directory there was evidence of a Black community because there were the indicators: Mount Rose Baptist Church, and St. Luke AME Church. The city directory also included names of families I have privy to some of their histories: Mary and Fred Bass, janitor and maid, and Henry Beatty, yardman. I was told that the Bass's daughter, Barbara, was the first Black baby born in Midland. There were others that were listed in generally the occupations supporting the growing community, largely as domestic workers. Peering into the Midland City Directory in 1946, there was evidence of Black-owned businesses. By then, there were 9 colored taxi companies. They were supported by cafes, barbers, beauty shops, hotels, car repair garages, gas stations, and entertainment, and primarily in the section of town south of the railroad and centered along Lee Street, the entry into the community. Some of the businesses listed in the directory included CAD Hotel, Dimon Apartments, Dr. William Cooper, physician, Blaylock's Garage, Nuff Said Hotel and Barbershop, Green Lantern Cafe, Chat and Chew Restaurant, Your Way Taxi Company, Cozy Cab Company, Last Chance Cafe, King's Amusement Parlor, Working Men's Club, Mason's Funeral Home, as examples, and many more listed as Black businesses supported the community. Booker Chandler was known to build many of the houses on the south side, including the one I grew up on Pennsylvania Street, and I was told that he constructed the home, largely on his own, from start to finish. Other builders like L.S. Littlejohn and D.L. Butler built this part of the city. By the 1960s, even I can recall many of the businesses that lined Lee Street, the main street of the black community in Midland. Lee Street Apartments, Lee Street Grocery, Jones Hotel, King's Cafe, McKenzie's Grocery, Chandler's Place, Tom's Pharmacy, Tasty Freeze, Scott's Beauty Shop, and Scott's Laundromat, Eastern Star Lodge, Odell Walker's Bail Bond, the cab stands, and the nearby Tyco Gas Station, Polka Dot Drive-In, the Red Room Restaurant, Soul City, the Swanky Club, King's Hickory Pit, Williams Texaco, and Dr. Viola Coleman's Medical Office. The diversity of black businesses increased after the 1960s, but the centralization around Lee Street diminished. When Carver High School was closed in 1968 and Bunch Elementary closed during the same year, traffic around these schools and attention to the community supporting them was diverted. The hotels, many of the businesses and restaurants, closed in the following years. The city also had a changing housing market that allowed more of the Southside community residents to move to other areas of the city. As I look at today's black-owned businesses for this Juneteenth, there is a diverse group of operations. The cab stands are gone in favor of an unknown group of Uber and Lyft drivers. The black-owned grocery stores are gone, but there are markets of African food and African food store and at International Taste in Midland. The Juneteenth Black Business Expo is an opportunity for the community to come and see some of the businesses that have survived. Ellis Plumbing is the hallmark of black-owned businesses in Midland. It has more than 60 years of service to the community. There are other businesses with more than 25 years of operations to be represented at the expo, including Classics Auto Body, Robbie and James Fuller, many business representations, John Love representing Paperworks, Thomas Escotti representing TOE Driving Academy, and my own Roy Nelson State Farm. There are businesses that are expanding operations and innovations, such as Rodney Johnson's Barricades Plus and Jayco and John James's Mode Communications. There are community builder businesses like Lisa Kelly Realtors, Michael Whitehead's Live Pure Chiropractic, Lewis Davis's East Coast Framing and Drywall, Darren Williams' DWAC Heating Service, and Eddie Viper Security, Regina Blackman's Promissaria Life, Rodney Moses' Law Offices, Thurman Johnson's Edward Jones, Chattis Bar Realtors, and the entertaining Sue Roseberry. There are also new prototype businesses, such as Ricky Sanders' Upscale Patio Cleaning, Lara's Green C6 Energy, representing oilfield operations, Rodney Taylor's CrossFit Mix, and Angela Rico's Giggle Play Soft Play Rental. There will be businesses that represent the services for legal aid, motivation, and spiritual support. Lastly, there are many businesses that will present their products for jewelry, cosmetics, clothing, and accessories, and fashions. Many of the products feature new entrepreneurs who are making use of innovative marketing, social media, and reaching a diverse market of customers. Their examples can help business owners, even like myself, to expand. One last business to note is one state-owned by my co-chair of the expo, Audrey White. Her directory of black business puts together in historical form a collector's edition of the expo for after-the-event reference. Here's a sidebar that accompanies the previous story. At a glance: who, Midland Chapter NAACP. What, Juneteenth Black Business Expo. When, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday. Where, Old Carver Center Gym at 1300 East Wall Street. Details, No admission charge. And now from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Friday, June 17th, here are a mix of local and state articles. USGS reports 3.5 magnitude earthquake near Big Spring by Mercedes Cordero. The U.S. Geological Survey reported Thursday a 3.5 magnitude earthquake in northwest Howard County. According to the USGS, the quake was reported at 2:56 p.m. northwest of Big Spring at a depth of 5.8 miles. A 4.0 magnitude quake hit northwest of Big Spring on June 7th. There have been 224 quakes in the past 30 days and 2,323 in the past 365 days in West Texas, according to EarthquakeTrack.com. Officials say report of shootings and active shooter are a hoax by Stuart Doreen. On Thursday, there were reports on social media of an active shooter situation in Midland, the possible shooting of law enforcement officials, and even reports that people might want to avoid Midkiff Road. As it turned out, those reports from the community were entirely false, according to the Department of Public Safety and Midland County Sheriff's Office. Law enforcement officials responded to questions about the reports online, saying it was a hoax, the product of false calls by a man who could be mentally ill. All troopers and deputies are accounted for, DPS Sergeant Stephen Blanco told the Reporter-Telegram. There is no active shooter or hostage situation. This is a complete hoax. Midland County and DPS officials provided more detail later about a person who called in a report of kidnapping and fired shots Thursday morning and was later taken into custody. The events included: around 9:58 a.m., a call was received reporting a kidnapping and shots fired. Additional calls were made stating troopers and deputies had been shot near the intersection of State Highway 349 and West County Road 320. Deputies from the Midland County Sheriff's Office, DPS, and other local agencies responded to the scene near West County Road 320 and State Highway 349. The Department of Public Safety later reported that calls stated the shootings took place near the intersection of State Highway 349 and West County Road 320. The area, according to Google Maps, is near the town of Midkiff and in the vicinity of the Targa Legacy Gas Plant, not Midkiff Road in Midland. The investigation, which included the Texas Rangers, revealed that there was no kidnapping, no shots fired, nor a threat to the public, and the original caller, Lawrence Hawley, 72, was taken into custody, charged with a false report inducing an emergency response, which is a Class A misdemeanor, according to the county. All calls regarding both incidents are false, according to Blanco. In addition, further information posted to social media regarding an active shooter or hostage situation are false. All law enforcement officers from the responding agencies involved have been accounted for. DPS asked the Reporter-Telegram and other news media Thursday to help spread the word of the hoax to try to alert residents who had seen inaccurate reports. State news. Experts predict higher heat, Midwest drought for summer, by Brian K. Sullivan, Bloomberg. Higher than normal heat is forecast to blanket most of the U.S., from July to September, drying out large chunks of the Great Plains and the Midwest, while threatening to push drought into the Mississippi River Valley. A swath of land from Wyoming to Montana, southeast to Kansas, Oklahoma, and the Texas Panhandle will likely be the driest, while Arizona and the East Coast could see more rain than normal, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration said Thursday in a media call. New England and Utah face the highest risks for above-normal temperatures, while the forecast is unclear for the Pacific Northwest and parts of the northern Great Plains. The outlooks come after weather records are getting toppled across the U.S. California had its driest January to May period on record, while Texas had its second warmest May in data going back to 1895, said Victor Murphy, a climate services program manager with the National Weather Service. Only 1996 was hotter. Texas also had its eighth driest January to May on the books and was the driest since 2011, a year that became the state's worst summer for heat and drought. This June has already delivered record heat to Texas, Murphy said. Texas reservoirs are about 77% full at this time of year, a little bit more than levels seen in 2011, he said. The reservoirs in the Lone Star State are at about 10% below normal levels based on a 30-year average. Most of the drought conditions across Arizona and parts of New Mexico are expected to be erased by the so-called Southwest Monsoon, which typically starts around June or July, said Brad Pugh, a forecaster with the U.S. Climate Prediction Center. Energy Secretary to visit Dallas as Texans see gas and electricity prices surge. By Joseph Morton, Dallas Morning News, Washington. U.S. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm will be in Dallas on Friday to promote the Biden administration's work on renewable energy as consumers face sky-high prices for gasoline and electricity. The cost of electricity is a core element of the inflation currently hammering Americans and endangering Democrats' election prospects in the fall. The White House has blamed high energy prices on a mix of factors that include a COVID-19 hangover, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and oil companies more focused on profits than production. Republicans say pain at the pump is at least in part the result of Biden holding back domestic fossil fuel production in the name of reducing greenhouse gas emissions and addressing global climate change. Granholm will be joined at a listening session by local energy leaders and Representative Mark Vesey, Democrat, Fort Worth. She also plans to tour a heat pump research and development facility and make an announcement related to a department initiative for improving heat pump technology. Advancements, the department says, can help tackle climate change, create jobs, and save money on their utility bills. As part of the initiative, the development previously identified six HVAC manufacturers that would launch field demonstrations and pilot programs, two of which are located in Texas, Daikin and Waller, and Lennox International in Richardson. Democrats are feeling the heat from gas prices that have now reached a national average of roughly $5 a gallon. President Biden is releasing a record million barrels of oil a day from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve. On Wednesday, Biden sent a letter to major U.S. oil refiners calling for increased production to help address the crisis. Your companies need to work with my administration to bring forward concrete, near-term solutions that address the crisis, Biden wrote. The White House cast it as oil companies' patriotic duty to take some of the windfall profits they are enjoying from the high gas prices and devote them to boosting production. American Petroleum Institute President and CEO Mike Summers responded in a written statement that the industry appreciates the opportunity for increased dialogue with the administration, but that Biden's policies of moving away from oil and gas have compounded inflation. Summers outlined policy moves he said would help the situation, many of which focused on easing permitting requirements and regulations to allow the advancement of energy-related infrastructure. Ahead of his travel to the Middle East next month, we urge the president to prioritize unlocking U.S. energy resources that are the envy of the world instead of increasing reliance on foreign sources, Summer said. Gifts of Hope in Midland celebrates life. June event was part of National Cancer Survivors Day, celebration of life. From Staff Reports. As part of the 35th annual National Cancer Survivors Day celebration of life, cancer survivors and their supporters around the world united on June 5th to recognize cancer survivors, raise awareness of the ongoing challenges cancer survivors face, and celebrate life. Gifts of Hope in Midland hosted National Cancer Survivor Day for the Permian Basin community at the Hope House, 2006 West Tennessee Avenue. The event included a local cancer survivor speaker, Melanie Gray, as well as complimentary treats and refreshments donated from various businesses. Each survivor left with a donated plant from Casa Verde Nursery. With nearly 17 million people living with and beyond cancer in the U.S. today, and more than 43 million cancer survivors worldwide, everyone knows someone whose life has been touched by cancer, Gifts of Hope officials stated. This is the oil and energy page. Oil price jumps up 2% after rate hike by Devika Krishna Kumar and Sheila Tobin, Bloomberg. Oil posted its biggest gain in over a week in choppy trade as traders weighed the prospect of more rate hikes against persistently tight supplies. West Texas Intermediate closed above $117 a barrel after rebounding from a session low of $112.31. Brent ended just under $120. This week, the Federal Reserve raised interest rates to 75 basis points as it sought to combat surging inflation. The U.S. Central Bank signaled a willingness to accept a recession and a rise in unemployment in its resolve to contain elevated inflation. "There is a churn in the market today," said John Kilduff, a partner at hedge fund Again Capital in New York. The continued supply concerns remain supportive, but the economic data are moves by the Fed and other central banks is holding back further gains. Traders were covering short positions, dealers said, adding to the swings in prices. Despite the increasing risks for the economy, crude is up more than 50% this year following a tightening of energy markets after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Global supply will struggle to meet rising demand in 2023, the International Energy Agency said in a monthly report on Wednesday. Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated said on Thursday that the market has tightened quicker than they were expecting. The war in Ukraine has fanned inflation worldwide, with U.S. retail gasoline recently topping $5 a gallon. That has exacerbated inflation that is running at the hottest rate in 40 years and has forced central banks to embark on an aggressive rate tightening path. The rate hikes coming up triggered quite some profit taking on long positions, said Hans van Cleef, senior energy economist at ABN AMRO. At the same time, downside was limited as the tight market conditions added a floor to the prices. The surge in prices is hitting consumers across the globe. Citigroup Incorporated sees buyers of commodities paying producers about $5.2 trillion more in 2022 than they did 3 years ago. European airline Wizz Air said Thursday that it will reverse a post-pandemic policy of not hedging its fuel bill as oil prices surge. The slump in crude prices in recent days has been steep, and WTI is trading at $8 below its high for the week. That has also shown up in the structure of the futures curve, where time spreads have weakened substantially. The U.S. benchmark's prompt spread, a gauge of how tight the market is, was trading at its weakest level in about a month on Thursday. Sizzling gasoline market cools with futures, pump price dip, by Chunzi Xu, Bloomberg. Cooling pump prices and futures contracts are signs that the U.S. gasoline market may be taking a breather amid slower demand growth and higher refinery runs. The average national pump price in the U.S. fell slightly overnight for the first time in nearly 3 weeks, according to data from Auto Club AAA. The glimmer of softness echoes a weaker futures market, where a fourth straight day of declines in New York trading saw the NYMEX RBOB contract settle at $3.8942 a gallon, the lowest level in nearly 3 weeks. But at 5.014 cents a gallon, U.S. drivers are still paying in excess of 60% more at the pump to fill up their car compared with the same time a year ago. The summer driving season, which began with the Memorial Day weekend at the end of May, saw fuel consumption rise to the highest year-to-date level. But gains lagged prior seasonal levels, stoking concerns that elevated prices are holding some travelers back. That trend seems to be holding. The latest figures from the Energy Information Administration on Wednesday showed gasoline demand edged lower last week to 9.09 million barrels a day, the lowest for this week since 2013, excluding 2020, when demand tumbled in the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic. The four-week rolling average barely climbed from the prior period and further trails seasonal norms. Meanwhile, refinery runs are near the highest ever for this time of year on the U.S. Gulf Coast and East Coast, according to the EIA. Macro factors are at work as well, said John Kilduff, founding partner of Again Capital. The steady drip of layoff notices could turn into a tsunami, and if the labor market falters, then gasoline demand will fall as a result, Kilduff said in an email to Bloomberg. Growing fears of a recession will also hinder gasoline demand early in the cycle, he added. Given futures prices typically dictate what's paid at the pump, some relief may be coming, said Linda Gierske, an analyst with ESAI Energy. Midland Reporter-Telegram obituaries published Friday, June 17th. Ernest Winfred Webb. Ernest Winfred Webb, 84, of Midland, made his final flight home to be with our father on Monday, June 13th. A visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, June 17th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Graveside service will be at 1 p.m. Saturday, June 18th at Rest Haven Memorial Park, 4616 North Big Spring Street, Midland, Texas. Ernie was born November 3, 1937, in Augusta, Kansas, to James Iber Claude Webb and Fern Leona Winters. Ernie is survived by his three children, son Brian Webb and wife Tamara, daughter Sean Ketchum and husband Danny, and son Darren Webb and wife Jody, all of Midland, plus grandchildren. Ernie is preceded in death by the love of his life, Wilma Jean Webb, his father, James Iber Claude Webb, his mother, Fern Leona Winters Webb, his sister, Marjorie Webb Roden, and his great-granddaughter, Maisie Jean Martin. The family would like to express their gratitude towards Hospice of Midland and Comfort Keepers for the constant and dedicated care of Ernie and the many hospital and medical professionals who assisted Ernie. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Wounded Warrior Project, American Cancer Society, or St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Death notices for Friday. Brandy Bauer. Brandy Bauer of Gardendale died June 13th in Gardendale, Texas. A memorial service will be held on June 17th at 11 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Funeral Home. Isaac Milliken. Isaac Milliken of Midland died February 14th, 2022 in Midland. A memorial service will be held on June 18th at 10 a.m. at Kelview Heights Baptist Church. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Rhonda Hawkins. Rhonda Mae Hawkins died Monday, June 6th in Farmers Branch, Texas. Rhonda was born Monday, January 25th, 1965 in Monahans, Texas. A memorial service for Rhonda will be held Saturday, June 18th at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, 8801 Mastrop Road, Aubrey, Texas, 76227 at 10:30 a.m. William Harrison Stevens. William Harrison Stevens of Odessa died June 12th in Odessa. Funeral followed by burial will be held June 21st, 10 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Funeral Home Crematory in Midland.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, June 17th, 2022. Water replenishment taking longer than planned. Odessans will likely have to wait until Saturday now to brush their teeth using city water, Utilities Director Tom Kerr announced Thursday morning. Originally, Kerr thought the city would be able to lift the citywide boil alert imposed early Tuesday morning today, but it's taking longer to replenish the city's water system than anticipated. The city has to refill the city's entire water system, which includes three large water towers with 15 to 20 million gallons of water. At noon, Kerr said, if you don't have water, visit the city's website and fill out the form. He said residents should have water throughout the day, throughout the city. Early Thursday, Kerr said two of the three tanks in the city's lower plains have been filled, but the third tank in the upper plains near Yukon Road, which normally holds 500,000 gallons of water, didn't fill until later in the day. Roughly 30,000 people are served by that tank, and the demand is higher than anticipated, Kerr said, adding that this is the first time the city of Odessa has had to go through this process. He again reminded Odessans they should still be trying to conserve water, which will reduce the risks of another line break and help the city fill the remaining tank quicker. Once all three tanks are filled, the city will then have to make sure there is a sufficient amount of chlorine added to the water before taking 8 to 10 water samples from all over Odessa to test for dangerous bacteria and microbes, Kerr said. Chlorine is routinely added to water to kill those things, Kerr said. Once the samples are collected, it takes 24 hours for test results, and if the results are negative, the boil alert will be lifted, he said. The city of Odessa learned around dinnertime Monday that a major 24-inch water line had sprung a leak at 42nd and San Jacinto Streets. On Monday, crews were unable to isolate the original leak because of a faulty valve that they tried to access from above ground, Kerr said. Because they were unsuccessful, the city was forced to shut down the city's water plant, which prompted the boil alert to be issued. The crews finished repairing the line around 3:45 a.m. Wednesday, but discovered a, quote, manageable leak, end quote, around a repair fitting later in the day. Because of the new leak, Kerr said crews began digging up the intersection of 42nd Street and Andrews Highway Wednesday night to reach and repair the valve. Crews reached the valve around 7 a.m. Thursday morning and are now attempting to repair it. If they are unable to, Kerr said they have contingency plans in mind that don't involve shutting the entire water system down again. Quote, we really appreciate the cooperation we have been given. It's been tremendous, end quote, Kerr said. Quote, the vast majority of the community has been very, very helpful. We all are in pain about this situation. We hope to get this fully addressed as quickly as possible, end quote. The city continues to operate a water distribution center in Building E on the grounds of the Ector County Coliseum. Learning returns. Map results show progress. The return of a summer learning post-water crisis, a map results overview, and a bevy of candidates from the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees were on the mind of Superintendent Scott Murray during his Wednesday media call. A boil water notice was expected to remain in effect through at least Friday in the aftermath of a 24-inch water line break that occurred Monday. Quote, we will serve breakfast and lunch, but our cafeteria has prepared meals that do not require the usage of water. We will have bottled water on site so kids that attend summer learning will have access to bottled water throughout the day, end quote, Murray said. Breakfast and lunch was packaged meals or things that can be served cold. Quote, hopefully on Monday, we're back to full speed, end quote, he added. Summer learning is scheduled through June and July. They have time off for July 4th, and the school and school offices are on a 4-day work week. Data from the Measure of Academic Progress tests in reading, math, and science were shared with trustees June 14th. Quote, we provide assessments in all three of those content areas, and we use that tool to help us know and understand how kids are growing in those three content areas throughout the year. We administer it at the beginning of the year, at the middle of the year, and again at the end of the year. So on Tuesday night, our trustees were presented with our end-of-year data for the 21-22 school year, and data indicate that not only are our students growing, but growing at significant rates. What you would normally expect is that if a child attends school or a full year, 180 days, they would learn for 180 days, so the growth would reflect 180 days of learning. What we saw in our data, however, is that many of our students were growing beyond just 180 days, so they were learning more than what was expected. We saw that across the board in mathematics and in many areas in reading, end quote, Murray said. He said that the district is excited about that and noted that it reflects the hard work of teachers, administrators, and all those who support student learning. He added that there was strong growth in math from kindergarten through high school. Quote, this is important for our students to gain more than just 1 year in mathematics, end quote, Murray said. Quote, mathematics was affected significantly by the pandemic. In fact, in Texas, we saw approximately a 19-point drop in mathematics scores across the state of Texas, and that was due to the loss of learning in the pandemic, end quote, he added. Murray said they were excited to see that students not only received a full year's worth of learning, but surpassed a year's worth of growth. Quote, that means that our kids are not just maintaining, but they're getting ahead, and that's the right thing to do. We also saw significant growth in particular areas in reading, so not only, again, maintaining, but actually getting ahead, and in some instances, surpassing where we were pre-pandemic. We didn't lose as much in the area of reading, not only when we look at ECISD, but across the state of Texas. And even nationally, we see that reading was the academic area that didn't suffer as much loss during the pandemic and as kids suffered in mathematics, end quote, Murray said. He added that significant growth in reading and math was seen in kindergarten students. Quote, that is a direct correlation to kids coming in better prepared. We transitioned to a full-day pre-K program for our four-year-olds, and this year those students entered kindergarten. At the beginning of the year, we saw a dramatic increase in kindergarten readiness, and then our MAP data indicated that our kindergarten just really blew it off the top. They really outperformed any other group of kindergartners that we've seen, end quote, Murray said. Quote, it's proof that early readiness makes a difference as kids matriculate through school, so great news for our kindergarten teachers and pre-K teachers that support those kids, end quote, he added. In sixth grade, ECISD saw significant growth in reading and mathematics. Quote, that is a difficult transition year from elementary to middle, but our sixth graders indicated clearly that they had a very successful year, end quote, Murray said. He commended teachers and principals for a job well done. Star and end-of-course exam results will be presented at the board meeting. He said the increased growth will yield increased proficiency levels among students. Quote, MAP assessment has a predictor based on how students are growing. We pay a bit more attention to just pure growth. However, our primary use of the MAP assessment is just to monitor the growth of our students as they are working through the Texas standards. The MAP assessment is directly aligned to the standards that we have in Texas, so the data that is generated from the MAP assessment really helps our teachers know what concepts students have mastered and then which concepts students still need to work on, end quote, Murray said. He added that teachers use that data to inform the lessons that they provide. The Board of Trustees will conduct interviews with eight prospects for the District 7 spot vacated by Nelson Minyard at a special called meeting 6 p.m. Monday. There will be a public comment period before trustees go into closed session. The board will vote on the appointee during the regular meeting June 21st. Applicants are Randy Adams, James Drexler, Tony Hardesty, Dennis Jones, Travis Overton, John Rabinault, David Soville, and Robert Thayer. The board will interview all eight candidates in closed session for 20 minutes each, one at a time, Murray said. He added that he was pleased as a superintendent, and he knows trustees were pleased that so many people expressed interest in the position. Quote, in fact, more people expressed interest, but they simply didn't live in District 7, end quote, Murray said. Basin PBS announces new education director. Basin PBS announced the arrival of Jana Pulig as its new director of education, a press release stated. Pulig, who is from Big Lake, is a world traveler and passionate about education. Pulig attended Texas A&M University, where she received her bachelor's degree in anthropology with a minor in museum studies. After college, she spent 10 months with NET Ministries Australia, organizing, running, and participating in retreats for students in grades 4 through 12. Pulig fell in love with education and wanted more. Upon her return, she taught 8th grade social studies for 3 years, as well as coached junior high volleyball, basketball, and track at Reagan County ISD in Big Lake. After moving to Midland to be closer to loved ones, she found that Basin PBS would allow her to use her knowledge and skills gained in teaching to serve the community in ways she couldn't before. Quote, I want to continue fostering relationships with our local school districts, daycares, and homeschool families in Midland and Odessa, but also reach out to those in the greater Permian Basin area as well, end quote, Pulig stated in the press release. Laura Wolf, Basin PBS CEO and general manager, stated in the press release, quote, Jana's experience in small school district gives us an insight on how to better serve the smaller communities in our viewing area. We are thrilled to have Jana on board as we advance education efforts throughout West Texas, end quote. First Basin requests donations for Rainbow Room back-to-school drive. First Basin Credit Union has officially kicked off the 7th annual back-to-school donation drive, benefiting children of the Rainbow Room of the Permian Basin, a press release detailed. While summer may have just begun, First Basin wants to ensure area children are prepared with the necessary school supplies for the 2022-2023 school year. First Basin is requesting monetary donations be made at any FBCU location in Midland, Odessa, or Andrews, account number 80001-02. Donations will be accepted through July 27th with a $500 donation from First Basin kicking off the drive. All donations collected will be presented to the Rainbow Room for purchasing school supplies for the upcoming school year. The Rainbow Room works with Child Protective Services to assist foster children and all other children involved in CPS care throughout Midland, Odessa, Andrews, and surrounding counties. First Basin believes every child deserves an opportunity to have the supplies they need to be prepared, successful, and confident in school. For this reason, First Basin and its more than 25,000 members are committed to supporting the Rainbow Room. Raising Cane's expands partnership with 100 Black Men of America. 100 Black Men of America, Inc. and Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers are joining forces to grow their partnership, a press release stated. As of Wednesday, 100 Black Men of America, recognized as the nation's top African-American-led mentoring organization, accepted a $100,000 donation from Raising Cane's in conjunction with their 36th annual conference and Juneteenth Independence Day. The donation will go toward the organization's signature programs and local chapters, such as Mentoring, Economic Empowerment, and Collegiate 100. Their first in-person conference since COVID, 100 Black Men of America's June 16th through 18th event, will focus on mentoring across a lifetime. This one-of-a-kind event connects America's youth, conference attendees, and the surrounding community with leading entrepreneurs, government officials, educators, clergy, business executives, nonprofit executives, and entertainers. Quote, we've been working with 100 Black Men of America locally for more than 5 years now, and we're proud to support their great work in education, mentorship, and helping to grow the next generation of leaders in our communities, end quote. Raising Cane's founder and CEO, Todd Graves, stated in the press release, quote, we are excited to take our partnership to the national level and help impact young lives across the country and beyond, end quote. Raising Cane's has supported the local chapter of 100 Black Men of America in its hometown of Baton Rouge since 2017, and in 2019 pledged $100,000 to help advance the organization's mentoring, education, health and wellness, and economic empowerment efforts. Raising Cane's is an official partner of the 100 Black Men of Baton Rouge's entrepreneurship program and supports its ongoing efforts and programs throughout the year. Today's $100,000 donation to the national organization is an addition to the $100,000 pledged in 2019 to the Baton Rouge chapter. Quote, partnerships like ours with Raising Cane's are a cornerstone of how our organization is the leading African-American-led mentorship program in the country. End quote. 100 Black Men of America, Mid-South District Director Michael W. Victorian stated in the press release. Quote, in addition to benefiting mentorship, this donation will also help support our campus-based program, the Collegiate 100, as well as economic empowerment initiatives. This announcement has added to the excitement of 36th annual conference kicking off today in Hollywood, Florida. End quote. For 25 years, Raising Cane's has been committed to the communities it serves and has provided over $100 million in support to thousands of local organizations. As part of its 25th anniversary year-long celebration, Raising Cane's committed $25 million to nonprofits, organizations, schools, and more in its local communities from coast to coast. For more information on support for your organization, please visit raisingcanes.com/FAQ/fundraiser. TEA releases 2022 STAR results. The Texas Education Agency released spring 2022 State of Texas Assessments of Academic Readiness results for end-of-course assessments. The results include assessments in Algebra 1, English 1, English 2, Biology, and U.S. History. This year's STAR EOC assessment results show progress in the three tests that saw a decline during COVID-19. In these three tests, Algebra 1, Biology, and U.S. History, Texas student performance in the meets grade level category improved, as the percentage of high school students meeting grade level is moving closer to pre-pandemic levels. These improvements are a welcome sign that Texas students are moving in the right direction in their post-pandemic academic recovery. In the two tests that did not show a negative impact from COVID-19, English 1 and English 2, results stayed largely consistent from last school year. Quote, these results provide encouraging evidence that the academic recovery plans adopted by the Texas legislature and implemented by our state's 370,000 dedicated teachers are working for our students, end quote. Texas Education Commissioner Mike Morath said in a news release, quote, we have made some progress to date, but there is still work to be done to fully recover from the academic effects of the COVID slide. We're confident we'll get there because Texas educators are all in on helping their students to make the necessary academic gains, end quote. Among the policies to help support academic gains is House Bill 4545-87R. If students do not meet the passing standard on a STAR EOC assessment, HB 4545 entitles students either to receive 30 hours of targeted tutoring before, during, or after school for each subject in which they did not pass the corresponding EOC assessment, or to be assigned to a classroom overseen by a certified master, exemplary, or recognized teacher. Quote, it is critical we use all available tools, including standardized tests, to measure student performance and help address any possible learning loss from COVID-19-related disruptions. Parents need to have access to clear information on where their students are, compared to previous years, and how much progress was made during the most recent school year. Teachers need reliable input on how students are doing relative to a consistent set of state standards. And school district leaders rely on the results from these assessments to properly lead their school systems in ways that maximize support for student academic growth, end quote, Morath said. To meet state graduation requirements, students must have either passed STAR EOC assessments, scored high enough on a substitute assessment, e.g. PSAT, SAT, ACT, AP, TSIA, or meet the requirements of an individual graduation committee, IGC. Results for STAR grades 3 through 8 assessments will be made publicly available on June 24th and will give families and schools across Texas a better understanding of how students are doing. State law has recently changed to remove any high stakes for students associated with STAR tests in grades 3 through 8. There is no requirement under state law that students who fail any STAR grades 3 through 8 assessment repeat a grade, instead allowing STAR results solely to serve as information on how best to support students moving forward. More changes to STAR are coming in the 2022-23 school year. TEA is implementing changes from House Bill 3906-86R that require STAR to be redesigned to better align with classroom instruction. These changes aim to improve student engagement and eliminate instruction that is solely directed toward test preparation. These changes, which will not alter the test difficulty, will be fully in effect by the spring 2023 test administration. Parents are encouraged to log in and learn more about their child's results by going to texasassessment.gov. Parents can view a variety of resources and assessment components, including each STAR question and answer, along with their child's answer. The website also provides resources designed to help parents prepare their son or daughter as he or she progresses from grade to grade. Resources include tools to support a student's ability to read and write, as well as tips and questions to help prepare for parent-teacher conferences in the 2022-23 school year. To review STAR state-level reports, visit tinyurl.com/MWNSD7PK. DPS says reports of active shooter is a hoax. Texas Department of Public Safety Sergeant Stephen Blanco said a report about a shooting at the Midland-Upton County line was a hoax. Quote, there is no active shooter. There is no barricaded subject. There is no hostage situation, end quote, Blanco said. Quote, all troopers are accounted for, all Upton County deputies are accounted for, and all Midland County deputies are accounted for. No one has been shot, end quote. Blanco said authorities received a 911 call around 10 a.m. Thursday from someone who reported a trooper and a deputy had been shot near the Midland-Upton County line on the Lease Road, prompting a large law enforcement response. From there, false rumors began to fly across social media, he said. Quote, we believe we have the person who made the call, end quote, Blanco said. An investigation into what was said and how many calls were made is underway.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.